is going to happen and what you think you will be seeing. I am now coming down to say this is what you are looking for. That was the intro to it. So I thought that was interesting, along with what we...
Yeah. That imagination then.
Yeah, I keep going, okay, Lord, here's my preconceived ideas and notions.
Here as they much are, as I can imagine.
Yeah. Give them to you and...
Steal a little bit of this.
So did you already turn it on? Is it on for her?
It was, but I think I only got part of that. Do you want to rephrase that? Or re-speak it?
Your horizon line is changing. Look for the highway forming before you. Oh, that was the title. Quote, this is a time that I am breaking open clear vision for my people. No longer will you walk in what you think is going to happen and what you think you will be seeing. I am now coming down to say this is what you are looking for. I am the anointed one who watches over you and opens your eyelids. Where you have been closed and veiled and not able to see what you need to see, I am removing the veil and causing your eyes to be aware and watching. I will cause the reflection of light to open up your vision and the horizon line for your future to change.
Well, as I mentioned last week, I think it was, the Lord has just been working with me on wisdom and asking for wisdom. And what all that means. And I got up one morning and said, Lord, where do you want me to read? And Proverbs. And it came up to Proverbs 1. And I can literally say, I have never read this before. Not the way that I am seeing it now. And I used to read, you know, one on day one and of the month and then do all 31 and did that for years. And so I just kind of wanted to go through some of this stuff again, and I like to come down to the least common denominator, you know? So Proverbs 1 is a proverb of Solomon, who was the son of David, the king of Israel. And it says a bunch of fours here. Why the Proverbs? For attaining wisdom and discipline. Why the Proverbs? For understanding words of insight. For acquiring a disciplined and prudent life. Doing what is right and just and fair. Why the Proverbs? For giving prudence to the simple. Knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning. And let the discerning get guidance. For understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and the riddles of the wise. And when I read that one, I thought about the Lord Jesus, where he'd speak in parables, and he'd speak all these things. And I thought, oh, wow. And our visions, when we go to heaven, the things that we see that we don't understand, but we go, well, Lord, what is that? So the Proverbs are for all of those things. And then there's this statement that I'm going, where did this come from? You're talking about what the Proverbs are for, and then it's all of a sudden, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Okay. So go over to 2, verse 1. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Okay, then back over there on verse 7 and verse 1, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, And then over here in verse 5, it says, the fear of, let's see, then you will understand the fear of the Lord. And so I'll understand the fear of the Lord if, in verse 1, chapter 2, you accept the words, you store up the commands within you, you turn your ear to wisdom, you apply your heart to understanding. So it's like accept, store up, turn your ear, apply your heart, and if you call out and you cry aloud and you look for it, you search for it, then you'll understand the fear of the Lord. And you'll find the knowledge of God. So I'm like, okay. Somehow or another, that fear of the Lord has always been nebulous to me. And then go to chapter 8. And verse 12, it says, I, wisdom, and we'll get into wisdom in a minute, but I, wisdom, I dwell together with prudence. I possess knowledge and discretion. To fear the Lord is to hate evil.
What verse are you on?
Oh, 8. Yeah. Well, I was, 12 now. 8,
verse
12.
Okay.
12.
Gotcha.
8, 12. 13, to fear the Lord is to hate evil. And wisdom just said, oh, then she says, I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior, perverse speech. And so she fears the Lord herself. Now go back to chapter 8, verse 1. Does not wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice on the heights along the way where the paths meet? She takes her stand beside the gates leading into the city. At the entrances, she cries aloud. To you, O men, I call out. I raise my voice to all mankind. You know, and before when I used to read these verses, I used to think wisdom was just this nebulous thing. And now after being in fellowship with all you guys, and you have literally met wisdom along the path, and she is a she, and she has a face, and she... it put a new impact when I read this now, that she's standing there at the entrance of the city, and she's calling. She's calling to men. Verse 4, to you, O men, I call out. I raise my voice to all mankind. You who are simple, gain prudence. You who are foolish, gain wisdom. Listen, for I have worthy things to say. I open my lips to speak what is right. My mouth speaks what is true. My lips detest wickedness. And to verse 13, to fear the Lord is to hate evil, and she hates evil, so she herself, wisdom, fears the Lord. Verse 8, all the words of my mouth are just, none of them are crooked, none of them is crooked or perverse. To the discerning, all of them are right, they are faultless to those who have knowledge. Choose my instruction instead of silver, rather than choice gold. For wisdom is more precious than rubies, and nothing you desire can compare with her. I, wisdom, dwell together with prudence, and I possess knowledge and discretion. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior, and perverse speech. Counsel and sound judgment are mine. I have understanding and power. By me, kings reign. We're learning to be kings and lords. By wisdom we reign. And rulers make laws that are just. By me princes govern and all nobles who rule on earth. I love those who love me, and those who seek me find me. With me are riches and honor. Enduring wealth and prosperity. My fruit is better than fine gold, What I yield surpasses choice silver. I walk in the way of righteousness along the paths of justice, bestowing wealth on those who love me and making their treasures full.
What verse are we at? Oh, 21.
Uh-huh. Okay. 22. The Lord brought me wisdom forth as the first of his works. I thought this was pretty interesting. Before his deeds of old, I was appointed from eternity. From the beginning, before the world began, when there were no oceans, I was given birth. When there were no springs abounding with water, before the mountains were settled in place, before the hills, I was given birth. Before he made the earth or its fields or any of the dust of the world, I was there when he set the heavens in place, when he marked out the horizon on the face of the deep, when he established the clouds above, and find security the fountains of the deep, when he gave the sea its boundary so the waters would not overstep his command, and when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was the craftsman at his side. I was filled with delight by day after day, rejoicing always in his presence, rejoicing in his whole world, and delighting in mankind. To me, that right there is a picture of wisdom fearing the Lord and being in awe of what he was doing and how he was doing it. Wisdom was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in the presence, rejoicing in his whole world and delighting in mankind. Now then, my sons, listen to me. Blessed are those who keep my ways. Listen to my instruction and be wise. Do not ignore it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at the doors, waiting at my doorway. For whoever finds me finds life and receives favor from the Lord. But whoever fails to find me harms himself. All who hate me love death. Go back to Proverbs 1. Actually, chapter 2 and verse 1, where it says, if you accept, if you store up, if you turn your ear, if you apply your heart, if you call out, if you cry aloud, if you look and search for wisdom, then will you understand the fear of the Lord and find knowledge of the knowledge of God? Verse 6, for the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He holds victory in store for the upright. He is a shield to those whose walk is blameless, for he guards the course of the just and protects the way of the faithful ones. So I had to ask myself, okay, fear the Lord. Do I have a tangible way of looking that? Do I have a tangible way of being able to apply that in my life, what the fear of the Lord looks like? It's the beginning of knowledge. Then I'll understand if I accept the words and store up and I turn my ear, apply my heart, and I call out, I cry out, I look, I search. I thought, okay, what does the searching look like? Well, in order to search, you have to have a hunger. You have to have a desire. And so I thought, okay, what does desire feel like? You know, how do you encourage hunger? And so I took hunger literally. And I went, okay, Steve and I are doing this. No sugar, no wheat, no dairy. And I eat a meal, and I eat a big meal. I mean, my plate is filled with vegetables and all this stuff, and I get done, and I am hungry. I want to eat more. I am hungry, so I'm going, okay, hunger. I am hungry, so what do? I get up, and I run around the kitchen. I open the fridge. I open the freezer. I look at the nuts. I look at the dried food. I just, give me something. And I'm looking, I'm searching. I have a desire. But there's a lack in me that is demanding to be fulfilled. And so when I try to apply that here and spiritual things, I had to read verse 20 of chapter 1. Wisdom calls aloud in the streets. She raises her voice in the public squares. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. In the gateways of the city, she makes her speech. And I'm going, okay, it gets noisy in my world sometimes. Life happening, it gets noisy. And she's calling out. Am I hearing her? Okay, right there. It's noisy in my world. I seek peace. Okay, there's a hunger. There's the hunger in me. I want peace. And then there's this place where she kind of warns against rejecting wisdom and da 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 da. And but verse 29, since they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord, since they would not accept my advice and spurn my rebuke, they will eat the fruit of their ways and be filled with the fruit of their schemes. For the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of the fools will destroy them. But! There's that three-letter word. But! Whoever listens to me will live in safety and be at ease without fear of harm. And I thought, with all that's going on in the world, you really have to steel your heart and your mind against not being fearful. But it says right there, we don't have to fear harm. And then, verse 12 of chapter 2, wisdom will save you from the ways of wicked men, from men whose words are perverse, who leave the straight paths and walk in the dark ways, who delight in the wrong and rejoice in the perverseness of evil, whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. It will save you also from the adulterous ways. And then it goes on and on. There's some good places in here. It's verse 20. Thus, because of all this, you will walk in the ways of good men and keep the paths of the righteous, for the upright will live in the land and the blameless remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land and the unfaithful will be torn from it. And you know, as I'm sitting here thinking about this, I go, I really would like to develop the hunger in my life so that I search and look and seek out more. And then I go, okay, it goes beyond hunger. It's really just a choice. Because I could be hungry sitting after I just finished my meal. And I could go, I'm so hungry, I want to get up and I want to go get something else to eat, or I want to sit here and just say, oh, I'm hungry, but I don't want to go out and do anything about it. I just want to gripe and complain and be complacent, and it's too hard of work to get up and go through the refrigerator again. So it really comes down to a choice. Because if you think of a hungry person in Africa or in a third world country, some people in the beginning of hunger do really, really crazy, wild things for hunger. But then there comes a point when the hunger just overtakes them and they just sit and don't do anything. So even in being hungry, there is a place in here, I didn't read it, but it says guard your heart. You still have to make a choice. So those are just some of the things that he's been working with me on. And then I've noticed, since he has in this last 2 weeks, I've been challenged on wisdom a lot. Things around my world is spinning and something comes up and I go, oh, I have a choice here. To act in wisdom, to call upon the Lord, to have faith. Your teaching in May has just so profoundly blessed me that I got revelation again on it yesterday. The right foot on faith, the left foot on gratitude. And that left foot being the power source and that right foot being the trusting in that faith. And I saw 2 feet and it flowed up into the core. It flowed up into your center and then John just pulls his cord out of his bag and it just hit me that John is plugged in and it's just this
download.
And that's the download of us with here and here grounded and that coming up and the power. I mean, it just...
So it sounds like you're speaking a lot about connection of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And we pursue connection in a lot of different ways, but you've got the Proverbs to define that connection. There's a lot of real specifics there. The other thought that came to mind as you were talking is that if desire, what's desire? The thing that Mike left with is pursuit. And pursuit is when you're sitting around hungry, you just finished your meal. If you really, maybe because you guys are looking at healthy snacks, pursuit might look like going up and getting your book out and saying, okay, I got to find a snack because I need something. And you go search the cupboard for it. And that's pursuit. Pursuit is this action you're talking about.
Yeah. See, that puts words to it more. The looking, the searching.
And even taking the wisdom of not just going and grabbing a dish of ice cream, you go to the book on healthy eating and say, what's a good snack? I need something. So there's you're engaged in that pursuit. And even using wisdom as you do that. You just painted a picture of this whole concept of wisdom and the consequences is, like you said, it's been nebulous or ethereal. But it seems pretty specific here. It paints a pretty detailed picture of how to pursue it, what it is, and what happens if you don't.
Well, what was fascinating to me is, you know, some of you have gotten, you've met wisdom. And I haven't met wisdom like that. But what I think that I am seeing is that through here, reading about it, thinking about the picture that you guys have shared with me that wisdom looks like, thinking about her like that, even though I haven't seen her myself, when I read this, I think I literally had an encounter, only different, so that I got connected. I mean, I literally, or I felt her calling out. Come on, guys. I want to give that. This is available. It is mine to give to you. And that's all my purpose is to give this to you. And take it. Recognize I'm calling out. And so I don't know. It was.
So what I think in describing, I consider myself a little bit in the same position you are, that I'm not, other than just sitting at the bench and trying to imagine what that person describes something, I've not personally met wisdom. But what we have to understand is meaning and sensing and seeing are all kind of the same things. So I think you're right. You just perceive wisdom as a person. So you've talked about how we've read Proverbs in the past, and it's all nebulous, and you read one kind of disjointed. But now all of a sudden you jump back and forth, and it painted a picture for you. So I think you're right. I think you had an encounter with the person of wisdom, and it was just because you were sensing it. It wasn't necessarily a big...
Yeah.
Picture in your screen, but you sensed her presence and you sensed the reality of her as a person. So that, I think, is the kind of counter that God is going to give us, and ultimately it may get to the point where we can do like Kristen does and see wisdom sitting on a bench at this little crisscross pathway, and there she is, and you sit down with her. That's just another way of sensing. Kristen is so visual.
Yeah.
But what you just described was is seeing in the sense of sensing. That's really encouraging to me because I am not real visual in my. So sometimes I think I'm similar to you. I'm getting some experiences, but I'm just sensing, and that's the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that was another thing that was really impressed upon me these last 2 weeks, is that, because I, you know, when you hang out with somebody who sees, you want to see. You have a desire and a hunger to see. And what I have figured out is that that's good, but if I let it trump the giftings that I have, then I'm just stalling my growth. And so I've decided to recognize that I did see wisdom in a feeling sort of way, you know, or through the word, through these words. So that's been really encouraging to me. And I got to speak with another person and encourage them along the same lines, because as soon as I shared some of this stuff, she wanted to see too. And I got to say, look, you did see. You just saw. You see? And it was because she sensed, because she's more of a feeler. So.
How freeform do you want this to go?
Yeah. This is just us here.
Yeah. Along the same lines, see if I can sort of cut my thought.
Well, I had some thoughts that came to me while we were reading, while you were reading. But first, I have a disclaimer that I know I don't have a great enough fear of the Lord. I know I don't. So that's my disclaimer. But I had several thoughts. You know, wisdom was compared to a treasure. And, you know, treasures, and I think there's a verse that says, search for her as silver, or is that understanding? But silver is hidden deep, and a lot of treasures are hidden deep, and it requires, it's just not something you're going to find on the surface level or casual searching. It requires going deep. And another, in the New King James, it said incline. You were reading, it was turn your ear. Mm-hmm. Mine was incline your ear, and I instantly had that picture of an animal. You know, they literally, their ears turn, and they're like, they're leaning forward to hear, you know, they're straining to hear, and that's like what the word is telling us, to incline our ear. And then I have this question, why is wisdom crying out? Is she crying out because no one is listening, and she has to cry and raise her voice, or is she crying out so men may hear? You know, it doesn't say she whispers. It didn't say like a still small voice. She's crying out. Mm-hmm. And so that was another question. And then when you spoke about the Africa, that, you know, people like in Africa who are hungry, I was instantly thinking, because I was in Uganda, and there's things that the children do to dull their hunger. And I thought, oh my goodness, that I'm sure there's things I do to dull my that dull my hunger, you know, or substituting something else for what should be a hunger for the Lord. And you know, and then the Lord keeps, for me anyway, this is just for me, when I'm praying and I'm saying, God, I want to see, or I want this, or whatever it may be, and it always comes back to, for me, about the Lord just reminding me I need to seek his presence above all else, and everything would like follow. But it's like the old cliche about, you know, seeking the gifts above the giver. You know, I have to constantly remember, I need to want him above all else. So wisdom, I wrote, wisdom creates things. It was Proverbs 8:12. One of the Bible versions says, let me just go there. I thought it was the NIV that said it. You are reading the NIV, so I don't know what. So I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. So there is a Bible version that says to find out knowledge of witty inventions.
Huh.
Wisdom, and then wisdom was there at the creation of the earth. And I've even heard teaching that wisdom was part of the creation. But so wisdom creates things, and wisdom makes straight paths for our feet. You know, so that's why we, you know, so often our walk with God is, you know, it could be straighter if we walked in wisdom a little more. And I know mine has just been all over the place. But my last thing I want to say is the law of first mention. And somebody, if they can find wisdom earlier than this, but it, I think it's Exodus 31, that, where wisdom is first, I think. And if anybody can tell me otherwise, but it, so this is just kind of like, I don't know, like evidence of wisdom creates things. Because it was when Solomon was building the temple, you know, as David had prepared the way for him and providing all of the resources or most of the resources and, you know, had everything ready for Solomon. And so, I'm jumping ahead. This is Moses. Okay, this is another, never mind, scratch that. So this is Moses. And it's the Lord spoke to Moses saying, see, I have called by name, how do you say his
Exodus 31.
31 verse 1. I have called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and I have filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom, in understanding, in knowledge, and in all manner of workmanship. This is, I think it's the first mention of wisdom. So it says here, this craftsman Bezalel had wisdom, and he created, and we know the descriptions of the temple, and I mean, it's just incredible. The workman, and he trained others, you know, the carving and the wood and the, you know, God likes beauty, so everything was beautiful. But wisdom creates things, and it's just for me, it's mind-blowing right now. But anyway, I will conclude by saying this. You know, maybe I think other people probably have the macro picture of wisdom. Right now, the Lord's just speaking to me on the micro level of wisdom, just in the little details. Mm-hmm. I just finished a book, and it gave a definition, and it just like, wow, that's what I want. It was applied skill for daily living. And for me, that's what it's like, just the littlest details. I'm sure people get it for the big picture and get the, you know, like knowledge for witty inventions. But for me right now, it's just the little details of life and the little, and just these, you know, asking God for his strategy for the day and his mandate for the day and his just creative ideas for living, creative strategy. And it just, that's how the Lord's just speaking to me in wisdom, as applied skill for living, to live successfully, to live prosperously, to live how he wants us to live.
It seems like that's kind of what Susan's conclusion is. She reached the whole thing. She spoke about some details, some specific details of life. It created a picture more of the nebulous that she had always thought. A little bit more of the specific that you're talking about.
Yeah, just, you know, down to the details of like, oh, here, how to better organize my kitchen for more efficiency, or just, you know, just, but anyway.
Yeah.
But wisdom creates things. That's what's resonating out of what you've read.
And now that you mentioned that, I don't know if I mentioned this to you guys, but last Friday night for Amanda's birthday, I took her to Portland to Cavalia. Have you? And
that's a presentation of some sort.
Yes, it's. Have you ever heard of Cirque du Soleil? Yeah, it's similar to that, but Cavalia is all horses and acrobats and dancers and.
Ooh.
It was exquisite. It's expensive to go to. They do it until the 1st of August. If you have an opportunity to go, I would suggest anybody to go, because anybody would enjoy it.
What's it called again?
Cavalia. Cavalia. It is a demonstration of beauty. Of relationship. Of skill, and now that you bring up the details to the creative ways that they have brought this production to pass, it is 6D. The dimensions on this thing are absolutely incredible, and the things that these people have done. Now, granted, I haven't been out in a long time, but the things that went on. I was just in awe of the things
it was
that
like your senses were filled up.
Oh, the music is live. It's all choreographed, and it's live music. The music is right there. The they bring in like 180,000 tons of dirt and they make a mountain for this to happen, and there's not a bad seat in the place. I mean, it's
wow.
It is held right down on the river in Portland, and just north of the tram, the trolley that goes up to OSHU, just right there in a gravel parking lot. And when you go inside, you think that you are in a castle.
Wow.
And wow. I mean, they even go to the point where it's landscaped beautifully. They have put down tiles, so you walk into the tent and you're on a floor. The artwork that they've gotten around that is for sale was beautiful, but the performance itself was, it was one of those lifetime things I will never forget in my life. And it was with horses. Some of it was with horses. Some of it was not. It was the acrobats and the rings and the African men. Oh, it was one of the most amazing performances, where these young, muscular, African, half-naked men in their tribal whatever stack each other. You know how they, and then they do all these, and they're flipping and running, and it's just them. And then they do a scene where they have their drums and they're singing and performing, and it's absolutely exquisite.
It's like wisdom leaves no detail undone.
No, and you know, I look at the performance and I look at what they did, and I go, somebody, somehow, who besides the Lord? I can't imagine one man orchestrating this whole entire performance. They move it in, build this place, and they perform for, well, they started like the 15th of July and they're going to the 1st of August. So a couple of 3 weeks. And then they tear it all down, and then they move it to LA, and they set it up again. And there's advertising all over. There is, the parking was decent. I just got into looking at the details. The restrooms,
wow,
had running water and a regular toilet and a courtyard where you could be if you were in the restroom, you know, and waiting because of,
wow.
The attention to detail and the wisdom to bring that, to pull this off, was exquisite. The chairs that you, the bleachers that you sat on literally had chairs, like a theater. The folded up seat, and you put the seat down, and it had backs that you were comfortable.
Wow.
It was a first class, the trees that they built, it was amazing.
They built trees?
Oh, there's huge trees in there. They were all fake. But they didn't look fake. They were...
Well, I'd like to read a few more verses of Exodus 31. I think maybe I didn't read far enough to... I mean, because it really, you know, about no detail being left undone. So I've called by name Bezaleel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and I have filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom, in understanding, in knowledge, in all manner of workmanship, to design artistic works, to work in gold, in silver, in bronze, in cutting jewels for setting, in carving wood, and to work in all manner of workmanship. And I, indeed I, have appointed with him Aholiab, the son of Ahisamach, of the tribe of Dan, and I have put wisdom in the hearts of all the gifted artisans, that they may make all that I have commanded you. And I guess I'll stop there. But it also mentions him again in chapter 35. Wisdom, this is just one small aspect of wisdom. Wisdom creates beauty, or is beauty.
It seems like what Susan's talking about is not necessarily ungodly, but a non-kingdom production that demonstrates all of that creativity.
Yeah, because I believe they still...
Man, God's creation. Even if he's not necessarily focused on his call to be a believer, creativity is still a manifestation of the creativity.
Yeah,
I had that same thought, you know, like wow, what if he was a, you know, what could be done if a believer did that?
I don't know if he's a believer or not. The place, you know, since I'm a feeler, I walked in, and I have gone to some similar, I went to the Lipizzans when they were here, and it just, I walked in and it was like,
Maybe he is.
I mean, it was...
So it could be there's an aspect to his acknowledgement of God's...
Yeah.
He's creating something beautiful. I don't...
I mean, they even the last scene, if nobody's going to go, I don't want to wreck it for you, but... the last scene, they fill the stage with water. They just fill the stage with water, and then they do the last things. Everybody does the last things, playing in the water, going through the water.
My goodness!
At the base of this mountain.
Oh my goodness!
Is there any research on the?
Wow.
I mean, behind the scenes of the history of this. Or?
Well, you can go online, and you can. There's about an hour, and it takes you behind the scenes. It takes you into the stables. It takes you into, you know, and so you learn some of the background. So yeah, I learned a lot of some of that,
but
they have
very much like a Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, but yeah,
it's exquisite.
Where every single thing is amazing.
Over the top.
Didn't you say horses at the beginning that this was all
horses and acrobats and
okay, so
like the African men, they didn't really have much to do with the horses except help in the production, and you know, they came in at different times and they were integrated, but they did their own little thing. Some of the acrobats and what they did were their own thing, but the stuff that they did on horses was exquisite. I mean, they had a small dressage performance, they had Roman riding, they had vaulting, they had all kinds of different things, and all dressed in that, in the
period.
Yeah, stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just exquisite. Something came to me I was going to tell you that was the. Oh, they had, I thought of you when they had the things that some of the, now these are tents they put up, but they have this huge apparatus in the ceiling that they dropped down, and it had a merry-go-round on it.
Cool.
And so there was like 7 people on this merry-go-round doing, climbing the poles and, you know, doing the acrobatic stuff. Oh, I thought of you when before they lowered it. There was 5 women in cloth drops, a loop that they had around them, and they did acrobats, and they had long, long cloths that came down that were probably this wide, the chiffon-y type things, and the horseback riders, the men all came on out on horses with the women on behind them, and they all had these. I don't know how to explain it, but they had a pant suit type thing on. Then on their sides, they had long things of cloth. Mm-hmm. And so they got up on this, and then the men held these long things of cloth, and they were riding in a circle, twirling, and the cloth, and it was just exquisite, the stuff that they would do.
The choreography.
Oh, yeah. It was just wonderful. And they have 65 horses. 18 of them are stallions, and all the rest are geldings. They have no mares. And they did a lot of free, what they call, word is escaping me right now, at liberty work, where the horses, the horses don't have any kind of halter, rope, bridle, anything on them at all. And they just followed their person around. At one point they had 28 horses and 28 people in the arena, and each horse was following its own person, and then they hooked them up. They put 2 together, and one person walked off, so 2 horses, and then they ended up with 4 together following one person. And every performance is different because you're dealing with live animals, so there's every horse is different. And I went, you know, this was right in the middle of this wisdom and beauty and relationship and passion. To see the passion, the handlers, the passion, the perseverance, the intent was just.
I think part of what Ron came up with really dovetails with that. He talked.
Yeah.
She said, I have appointed with him. Holy Abbot, son of Ahishamak of the tribe, and had put wisdom in the hearts of all the gifted artisans. That seems to be a thread of the discussion today.
And so that, you know, I always have to try to apply it to me. It brings me back to me. So what gifted artisan do I look like, or do I portray, or who?
But it's also the pursuit of excellence. Mm. I mean, we live in a fast food society that, you know, clothing is made cheaply, it's thrown away, you know. Craftsmanship is just not a value any longer in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And to then have a production where craftsmanship and the attention to detail, it's not monetarily makes sense. But if you have the vision, then you know that every one of those details is essential to create that atmosphere that when you walk into the bathroom, I mean, it's an entire experience.
Uh-huh.
You know? And so it's interesting to me that you don't have to be a Christian to create that. The gifts are there in different people to create it. And people recognize that it's off the scale. And to me, it's like, if they can see that and think about when God creates and when God does things, it's off the scale. It's beyond our comprehension, beyond our imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it sounds like that kind of experience is very uplifting, and it makes you think differently and look at your world around you differently.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we willing to not have that on a daily basis? Because it takes a greater investment of time and money and resources, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I believe the body of Christ is supposed to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
an amazing encounter that you can't ever forget.
It says, whatever we do, do all to the glory of God.
Yeah.
So I go back to Proverbs, I think it's 1:20. Wisdom calls loud outside. She raises her voice in the open square. She cries out in the chief concourses. At the beginning of the gates of the city, she speaks her words. Quote, how long, you simple ones, we live simplicity. So that helps her define a little bit when she says cry out.
Mm-hmm.
It says she calls aloud, but then she also is crying because they're not listening.
Mm.
You know, so how long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? This talks about the complexity of this production that you've talked about. So I think a part of what Julia is maybe alluding to is when you take the detail complexity of beauty that God has put into his creation, you get something like this as opposed to just a simplicity that lacks wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I didn't read this, but when I was reading this week, Julie, you just said, 4:7, wisdom is supreme, therefore get wisdom, though it costs you all you have.
Mm.
Get understanding.
Wow. What verse was that?
That was 4:7.
Oh, okay.
Proverbs 4, verse 7. Wisdom is supreme, therefore get wisdom, though it cost.
What type of version are you reading?
Verse 7.
She's got the NIV.
NIV?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts?
Listening.
And then, you know, just the whole thing right here. Chapter 3, the last verse, 35, the wise inherit honor, but fools he holds up to shame. Wise inherit honor. That's an inheritance.
So Mike talked a bit in his sleep this morning about wisdom, engaging wisdom, and the seven pillars of wisdom. And so it's apparent that I think your opening sense was that we've overlooked the importance of wisdom. And here
here in Proverbs, it's really been highlighted how precious it is. It's worth giving everything. So I think perhaps what's the message that God has laid on your heart to share with us that has something to do with how important it is for us to understand wisdom and who she is and how do we embrace her and what are the benefits of that. So that's an area of our Christianity that we just totally left out. And it seems like in this new, I don't know what you want to call it, the protocols or the new revelation or new perspective, that wisdom plays a really key role. But somehow we have to be acquainted with her because one of the things Mike said is when he talks about setting a bench of threes, he said you have to be careful not to just set a bench of three and then go out. Okay, now what do we do? He talked about having a blueprint first because it gives the bench of three something then to pursue. And he constantly, some of the people that chimed in talked about, you got to go and ask. You got to go and ask because that's easier said than done. Well, you know, just get a blueprint and then go work your blueprint out. Okay, that's even the language is new. Let alone how to do that. So there's some aspect of going to get wisdom. That's where the designs, the artisan, the craftsman, whatever it is that you're going to bring to the blueprint, wisdom's going to help you with that. Mm-hmm. So he talked a lot about engaging wisdom.
Yeah, that just spoke to me a lot because we can be acquainted with wisdom's ways, which I'll say like are here, but to be acquainted with wisdom herself is far more revelatory and inspiring
personal
and eye-opening. And,
Now I keep going back to that concept as Kristen tries to articulate for us the challenges and we've got to go get stepped into the course, et cetera, et cetera. And she will tell us, but I think maybe we have to go and ask questions. We have to be able to somehow learn to come before the Lord ourselves and such a relationship with Him. And now wisdom's been highlighted that when we're faced with our own decisions walking daily or in position of leadership in our little core group, when we're faced with finding answers, we've got to ask Him or her. So somehow we have to be able to do what she's talking about, go before me and ask.
Well, it seems like, you know, you're bringing up the topic and even that the Lord's highlighted it to you is that, I mean, our church is basically at a huge crossroad. And maybe I'm speaking out of line, but personally, I don't think we know which direction we're going. And we're not going to be in this building. We don't know where we're going to be. We don't know what the future looks like. And so it does sound like we really need to be crying out for wisdom. Because, and as you brought up earlier, Yvonne, we can envision what we think it's going to look like. And that may not be accurate whatsoever.
Right.
And the fact that we're sitting here with all this stuff around us, I mean, personally, I still am questioning whether what I've heard about our blueprint is even accurate. Because this just seems like a disconnect with what we thought that blueprint was and how we were reading it. And is it possible, and this is just me questioning my own, what I've heard, or how I've been led, is did I read the blueprint wrong? Did I hear incorrectly? Because here we are with a huge debt. We don't have a building. We don't have a vision, hardly. I mean, we do, but it's not manifesting itself. And so for me, it's like maybe I have totally missed wisdom.
Another way to put that.
I mean, Kristen doesn't share that. I mean, she thinks we've heard, but personally, I'm not past thinking I've made a big mistake.
You can hear something correctly, but you can interpret it incorrectly.
Right, and you can hear wrong.
Any
prophetic person in the world will say, I haven't always heard accurately.
Mm-hmm. So maybe a better way to phrase it.
But I'm just saying, I think this is an appropriate message.
Right.
We really need to press in towards wisdom.
Yeah, so maybe it's not so much that you heard inaccurately, or is that our ability to hear is not well developed. So that could be
we
said.
We know in part.
But I think what we're hearing is that in order to do what we're called to do, it needs to be developed to where we can count on it. So that's and it seems like you've brought wisdom into the picture that in order to get a blueprint and move forward on it, we need to have engaged with wisdom to know that this is really coming from Him. So I really bear witness to what you're saying, this whole concept of going before the Lord and hearing what He has to say. And there's two aspects of it for me, what you guys have heard me say. I'm focusing on the relationship part where I can hear Him speak to me individually. Now that has ramifications for what I bring to the church. But there's a whole other bit of the part of responsibility, the pathway of responsibility, where you actually go and get the blueprints for an ecclesia. That's same concept, but different venue, so to speak. So I think what Julia is saying is maybe true, that wisdom has not been as much a part of that process within our group as maybe it needs to be, and maybe that's why we're not feeling like we're right on. Because we haven't, somehow, wisdom hasn't been a part of it, so maybe we didn't hear it maturely or incorrectly. It really seems to be a strong message here about wisdom and age.
So I guess I just need to share from my heart too then. I really appreciate the newness. A bench of three, for heaven's sakes. that's new.
Well, everything's been new.
Yeah, everything is new. And so I guess I need to say that I appreciate the newness. I realize that, I don't even know how to say it. I am totally on board with what is going on. We're in debt. Is that right? Does it feel comfortable? Yes, no, I don't know. But I am there. So I appreciate your being honest and saying this is the way I feel and I'm doubting and da-da-da-da-da-da and I'm learning and I'm growing. That's what I appreciate, that I can learn and grow with you. If you say you completely heard totally wrong, I am not going to walk away. I am not going to judge. I am going to say, okay, we're in this together. All right, you're learning, you're growing. You are an incredible example to me, the bench of three, that you're willing to hear what you hear, step out on it, share it with other people, have them come on board with you, and then willing to say, oops, or not oops, this is how we grew through this and what we're doing. I'm totally on board with that, and it's not going to make me be burned and walk away. I'm willing to be the child and take a step and fall down on my butt and get back up and say, okay, well, I learned how a little bit of balance there. That muscle memory is going to help me out next time around. Mm-hmm. So
I guess I'm just saying it seems like we're in a perfect environment to really be seeking this wisdom thing, because there are a lot of decisions and a lot of unknowns that as a body, we need it. We need it. Each one of us needs,
so,
just like we're sharing now, what are people hearing?
So you said we're in a perfect position to hear from wisdom.
Well, we need wisdom.
Right.
So,
okay. So my
comment, our ear and,
so
take
my comment is, and I want to just set it aside. Okay, so how do we go about that? That's
right.
Probably something we need to process. I want to just put that on the shelf because there's something else rattling in my head. That I have to believe that this whole fact that I was willing to get this morning, take my son to the airport, knowing full well that I could get Mike's one of his releases and listen to it, some kind of a divine appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And so in your discussion, this just came up was Mike talked about what really was a revelation to me that some of the folks that have picked up this bench of three thing and ecclesia. They said they've started virtual ones where they have no home base, it's all virtual. And Mike says, well, to some extent, the virtual reality can help us, but he says, without having a place and a body of people where you are going to go and change living souls, it doesn't work. So he's basically saying, and he went into some depth on some of these folks are doing this because they don't want to get real. they've been burned, and they don't want to do what Julia just did. Said, maybe I blew it, maybe I heard it wrong, I don't know. That's what a bench of three has to do, and we've struggled with some of that, and Julie has been involved too, where we don't see eye to eye on some things, and we agree to disagree. And Mike has said, I've heard him say several times, in order for a bench of three to work, you got to let everything come to the surface. Transparency has to be complete. And he was talking about this morning, these people that are doing these virtual bench of threes, he says, the drawback, if that's their only venue, is they're doing it, and he spoke pretty strongly, they're doing it to avoid the transparency. But they don't have to face people who will disagree with them and see their face turn red or see their body language or whatever. You got to work through that. And Mike said it took 2 or 3 years for them to do that. So I think the point of that is what we're experiencing, the fact that you just said, even though we're sitting with this all this debt, I'm not going to walk away. I'm there. I think that's part of the transparency of a true ecclesia, be it a bench of three, a bench of seven, whatever government it is. I think the struggle that we're right here is what we've been called to, and it's a positive thing.
Well, and it's, you know, so often, even in our life experiences, it's when we're in a tight spot, or when we're challenged, whether it's physically or, you know, relationally, those are the times that we tend to grow the most, because we really do realize we've come to the end of our ability, and we have to really be seeking, and so that's sort of how I'm sensing our situation, is that we're in a difficult situation, and we have the choice to seek wisdom, to seek understanding, to incline our ear, or, you know, throw up the towel in.
Right.
I think we've already agreed we're not wanting to do that. But it's like, okay, so here's an opportunity, God. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel right. But how do you want to teach us? I mean, there's got to be something that we're learning in this. His provision, his goodness, his faithfulness. How to seek wisdom.
So that
just
was...
seems like a time.
So that was your question. How do we seek wisdom?
Yeah. So how do we? So she just articulated again is that's what we're being called to, a place we're uncomfortable. We need. It seems like finding wisdom has been highlighted. Okay. How do we go about that? What's our? What are we called to do to respond to this word that's come?
Well, I think ask.
Yeah, it's
one thing to do. Not all of it.
Pay careful attention to what we listen to. You know, wisdom's calling out.
Yeah, that's what I'm
inclining our ear to wisdom, because there's so much noise in the world and so many voices. And personally, I really don't want to tune into what's in the world sometimes, to be totally honest. I mean, I did happen to catch Trump's speech the other night, because I just happened to go in the car and my husband had it on that station. But I really, my desire is to listen to God, to hear what, I want to focus on God and what he's doing, because that's good news. The world is full of bad news. And I know we're not called to be ignorant of what's going on in the world, but I think there's
what we've been learning and immersing ourselves in is that we invite wisdom. Just
and
like
then
you'd invite a spirit of counsel or a spirit of healing or the spirit of the Lord, that we would invite wisdom to be in our midst, that we want to honor wisdom, we want to hear wisdom, we want to receive wisdom.
But it's like after we invite, though, we have to make sure we're
inclining
our ears. I remember years and years ago, a girl used to come to the gym I used to go to, and she would wear her own earplugs, listen to her own Christian music, while the rest of us listened to whatever it was. And I'm finding, yeah, you know, so I even just going to this class once a week, this aerobic thing, and just once a week, and you know, some stupid song will reverberate in my head, and I'm thinking, well, do I need to put in earplugs? Do I need to just, I don't want, you know, I don't. I mean, it's just.
Let me throw out a couple comments. One is, going back to Proverbs 1:7. Okay, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So there's something about the fear of the Lord. Okay, and that's, I think I heard someone say early on, you know, I just kind of poo-pooed wisdom. All right, your wisdom is, you know, it was just a nebulous concept. There's something about the fear of the Lord.
Yeah.
Okay, what does that mean to us, and how do we respond if we really, what does fear of the Lord look like? So it's possible, something pops in my head, if you guys at the school have taught it or about opening your gates, we have a gate of the fear of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of our gates.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we each individually need to ask ourselves, do I need to do some work on that gate? Now, I can't say that I've spent hours and hours of time working through each gate like Mike has described he did, but I do try to acknowledge that. Maybe that's a place where I need to work a little bit, because I remember Mike talking about you open your first love gate, and then you open your gates, and okay, so maybe on one day you're going to go with the fear of the Lord, and how does that come through at your gate of choice or something? But I think maybe just the fear of the Lord, mm-hmm. I think each of us probably needs to just ask ourselves, where am I deficient? How do I make up for that lack? What does that look like? It could be just in our own particular quiet times, once a week or once a daily. And then the second thought was, you talked about it, inclining your ear. You just described that once a week you go listen to this thing. So how can we incline our ear? Because that's something wisdom said to do, incline your ear.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just coming up with phrases that maybe clues to, okay, what actions you could take.
And I just see several times in here where, especially in 8, where she says, does not wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice?
Which one?
8. Proverbs 8.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
And then it says down there, to you, O men, I call out. I raise my voice, mankind, you simple. And then it says, listen.
Wow.
It says, listen. So I think it's another thing we need to do is, and on top of accepting the words and storing up the commands, because, you know, I ask myself this, do I accept his words? Do I accept this? And do I store them up within me? Do I incline my ear? Do I apply my heart? Do I call out, cry out, look, search? Well, I think all of these together, you know, listening, asking, we need to ask and
maybe we want to, I think we can